Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and this is the Downtime Podcast, where we take you inside the world of mountain biking. Meet the characters involved, hear their stories and find some insight to help us all get faster on our bikes. This week's episode is supported by 661. I've been a big fan of 661 knee pads and helmets for a while, so I was really stoked when they wanted to get involved in helping me keep bringing the podcast to you for free. 661 are going to be sending me a number of their latest products for me to try, and the first of those arrived yesterday. It's their Reset Full Face Helmet. Now, I've had a 661 carbon full face for the last 4 years, and I've been really impressed by it. So when they told me they had a new full face lid that only cost €99, I was worried that it wouldn't compare to my current carbon lid. The truth is, though, it's only 75 grams heavier, it looks way nicer, and has similar levels of venting to my old, much more expensive lid. I've no idea how they've done it, but 661 have built a great-looking, safe and well-fitting full face helmet for €99, and I'm certainly looking forward to getting out and riding in it. At that price, it's perfect for people like me who don't need a full face very often, but want something more than a half face lid for the occasional uplift day or a big mountains trip without breaking the bank. What's more, for Downtime listeners, 661 are kindly offering 25% off everything in their online store just for you. All you need to do is head to 661.com. That's SIXSIXONE.com and use the code DOWNTIMEPODCAST25 at the checkout to get your discount. That's DOWNTIMEPODCAST25, all lowercase and all one word. They've got a great range of half-face helmets, pads, gloves and shoes to check out too, all at 25% off for you guys and girls. And if you're quick, then you should be able to get things delivered before Christmas. Also, worth mentioning is the fact that they're going to be launching a MIPS-equipped version of the Reset full-face helmet in January, and that's going to retail for just €160. That'll feature the brand new E2 MIPS system, which is designed especially for full-face helmets, and it helps reduce rotational forces transmitted to your head in a crash, and it's those forces that can really cause some damage. Our listener discount's still going to be available then, so you can head to 661.com and use the code DOWNTIMEPODCAST25 in January if you want the MIPS version. While you're online, don't forget to head to downtimepodcast.com for all your podcast needs. There's the show notes for all of the episodes with links to things that we've mentioned in the show. There's a whole page to help you subscribe to the podcast so that you get each episode delivered to your device for free as soon as it's available. You can join our mailing list there to keep up to date with everything podcast related. And you can head to our web store where we now have hoodies, sweatshirts, t-shirts and mugs available. I'm super happy with the new range. The designs are looking really good now. The quality of the products is awesome. So go and check it out. If you've bought something already, thank you so much. It means a lot and it helps me keep this thing going. All right, on to this week's guest. Joining us today is Enduro World Series star Andrien Lanthier-Nadeau, or ALN. Andrien made an amazing return to the podium this season after missing the first few rounds due to injury. We talk about that, about what riding means to her, her background in cross country, psychology, and much, much more. So, without further ado, here's Andrien Lanthier-Nadeau. Andrien Lanthier-Nadeau, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. How's it going?
Hey, Chris, I'm good. Thanks. How are you doing?
Good stuff. I'm good, thank you. And I'm pretty glad that I managed to just about get through pronouncing your name.
Yeah, good work. Good start.
So ALN, what do your friends call you?
My friends from home in Quebec call me just Andrien.
Yeah.
And my brother was actually the initial FLN. So that's where that stems from in my family. I always wanted to be just as cool as my brother. So I thought, hey, why not use ALN because all of my English friends can't even pronounce my name. I guess that made some people upset on Ping Bike at some point. I'm super easy, like whatever people prefer. Some of my friends in English, like if it's like a casual thing, you'll be ALN. But if we're having like a very more serious conversation, it'll switch to Andrien or yeah.
Okay, good. I'm glad we got that one out of the way. Have you got any good nicknames that we can use?
Not really. The only one that stood is ALN. In French, okay. I get called André, but that's mostly by like my uncles and stuff.
Okay, good stuff. Well, yeah, so let's, you mentioned your brother. Tell us a little bit kind of about, you know, growing up and family and how you got into riding.
Yeah, I got into riding. My mom put me in cross-country skiing one winter. and I met my first ever coach. His name was René, and he was the coach of the cross-country skiing, but also of the mountain biking in the summer. And then I did a winter of cross-country skiing at like 8 years old. And then he said, what are you doing in the summer? And I was like, oh, nothing. Like, I ended up mountain biking. They took me on the team, or I'd say more of a club back then, on the East Coast in Quebec. And they said, we'll take you on even if you're yet too young. I was like a year too young to actually be, I guess it was like kind of an insurance thing with the club. And they said, it's okay if your mom comes to every training. So my mom and dad like used to mountain bike together before they had kids and stuff, back in the cool days. And my mom just said yes, and I guess put her back into shape. And for a year, she was just there with me at every training on Tuesdays and Thursdays and Sundays. And she took me around the province to do some racing, because in Quebec, kind of, if you were a mountain biker, you kind of were a racer. It was linked. Right. And that's how I got into mountain biking.
Awesome. Did you start racing kind of almost straight away then? Was it just part and parcel of it?
Kind of like just, it was a development club or a team, and the racing was kind of optional. Like, you weren't forced to race, but it was like strongly encouraged, and there was kind of a scene all around the province. So the first summer I picked up my bike, I ended up doing some races, but I was 8 years old, so it was like 3 minutes around the parking lot, and I can't believe how far my mom drove around the province to make me race those.
Fantastic. So were you like naturally competitive at that age? Did you want to kind of win and want to progress?
I guess I've always been like I was thinking about this, like, why am I a racer? Kind of, I guess it was kind of shown to me, but I think I really used it in my life as like, I think I've always been competitive or kind of a perfectionist, even though I'm far from perfect sometimes. But I've always wanted to push myself and wanted to give my 100% as far as I can remember. So I think I just like fell into the right place at the right time. And, when I was a kid, like, I lost my dad when I was that age. So I think my mom put me into sports just so I would like be a normal kid and have normal kids things to do. And I think I really used the competitive side of racing and biking as like a kind of a channel, how to channel my energy and my all those emotions that I maybe was going through. And I think that remained a pattern still up to now. Like, I use racing for way more than just racing.
So it has a kind of emotional connection for you.
Yeah, for sure. It runs deep.
That's cool. So, and racing back then would have been cross country, yeah?
Yeah. People only rode hardtails in spandex back then.
Nothing else existed.
Yeah
and so you went pretty far in cross country, am I right in thinking that?
I think I can agree to that. Like, it was the main thing I strive to excel in, like, for my whole teenagehood and like young adulthood as well. So I started racing those little 3-minute race when I was 8 years old. And then I moved on to doing some provincial racing, then some national level racing, and then some international level racing as well. When I was junior, I was good, like, in Quebec when I was a cadet, like a U17 and stuff, like when I was 16, 15, and those years. So there was some potential, so definitely like kept training hard through high school. I went to like a normal school. Like I just went to a public school. I didn't do like a sports school or anything.
Yeah.
And then like in 2010, I did my first international race. That was World Champs in Mont-Saint-Anne. And I finished 10th as a junior. So that's a highlight nice. Result, I think. Yeah, that was good. And I kept chasing the dream with cross country. Like I had a lot of people believing in me. Sometimes I think I doubted myself, or I was the one that needed to believe in me more. But it was a hard pursuit. Like I'd say there's a lot of people called up for it, but there only a few people make it, and that's because it's really hard. So kept doing it, went to a couple other world champs, did a couple of world cups, like a couple of good results. I also ended up doing pretty good at those eliminators when they were a thing. And then, so from the start of the international to 2015 is the first year I decided to bail on a cross country world cup to go race an enduro world series.
what kind of brought enduro into your life then? What made you bail on XC for an EWS?
Yeah, I think so I remember like seeing it like before 2015 and being like, what is this discipline? I'm always going to do cross country. I'm never going to do enduro. And what was it? I guess I was, I think a lot of people went through it, and Katie on this podcast kind of talks about it. Cross country is just challenging and it requires a lot. And for me, I wasn't able to keep the love of riding like alive when I was doing that. And as I said, like I have a deep connection with biking. So to lose that fun and that love of riding for me was really hard. It was like I was losing my main emotional outlet, my main like positive source of like positive emotion sources. And I think that's when I started looking away from the bubble of cross country and seeing that people look like they were having a really good time doing this enduro thing. And then the World Cup I skipped is Windham.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know if you know a little bit about Windham, but it's not, well, some people really like this World Cup, but it's pretty much like you go up a ski hill and then you go down a ski hill in grass. And I was like, I raced the Mount St. Anne World Cup that year, and I don't know, I kind of felt some closure, and I had emailed Natalie from Enduro World Series about how I dreamed of trying the Enduro in Whistler, and that if she needed to like have some results to back me out, I guess I had done some local Enduros here and there, and she said she didn't have a spot, but maybe someone would open up. And then last minute, someone did. And I ended up flying here and not doing Windham and racing Whistler.
Cool. So that was your first ever Enduro World Series then, was in Whistler?
Yeah, 2015 in Whistler.
What was that like then? A kind of pretty deep end going straight in at World Series level.
Yeah, like I'd done like a Hood River Enduro or any something like that, but I had never been on a trail bike before.
Okay.
Like zero. I'd only been on a Thunderbolt, which is like 130, 120 back then.
Yeah.
In terms of travel. So I think it ended up that I used Jesse's bike. Because, or like his training bike. Yeah, I used Jesse's training bike. And I pretty much had no idea what I was doing. And God knows you need to kind of know when you're at an EWS, like which trails you can ride or can't ride, when you should ride them, when you should practice them. So it was definitely cool and very thrilling to feel like I had so much to learn. Like To me, that's what really drew me in. Like, just, I have no idea what I'm doing about this discipline, but I'm having a lot of fun riding my bike. So it's kind of like a new challenge to figure out. And I ended up practicing with Amanda Sin. She used to race XC at the national level and international level as well. And then Marty Lazarski, a good friend of mine, we ended up practicing together. And thanks to the guidance of the Frenchies that were on Rocky back then, Isabeau, Florian, and Alex, I managed to make it through, yeah.
Awesome. Well, how was your result for that first experience?
Yeah, I just said I made it through. I totally didn't, actually. I did that year. It was like, hey, bud. And then top of the world was the second stage.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, so much adrenaline. I feel like I was like just buzzing the whole weekend, like so excited. Like, but I ended up doing pretty good on A-Bud, but I didn't want to know. And then I ended up knowing just before dropping it on top of the world. And as I said, I had no idea. So just being myself, I sprinted as fast as I could into top of the world and made like the two corners look really good. In the third one, I like kind of smashed my face pretty hard. I ended up finishing that stage. I definitely shouldn't have. And right. At the bottom, that was a bad racing decision. But at the bottom of the stage, I was my face was so swollen. Like, my one cheek had kind of taken an impact and I was a bit out of it. So we definitely called it. And I ended up not finishing my first TWS ever.
Well, but it sounds like you you got a buzz from it, maybe it reignited the fire and the enjoyment of riding again, because that was it then, wasn't it? You went off and did a few more rounds that season.
Yeah, totally. I remembered, like you said, like renewing with some feelings that I used to have when I was racing cross country. I remember the night before the first CWS, and it rained in Whistler that year. And I remember being before cross country race, so happy about the rain because I knew it was going to make it more technical and probably play in my favor. But that night I was in my bed and I was like, holy shit, it's raining. It's my first CWS. So I was kind of scared, but I was also like, I journal a lot and I have notes that say like, I feel alive, like from my head to my toes, like just having shivers, just thinking about what was going to go down tomorrow and the excitement of racing. So I think that all those strong feelings and that buzzing of like just really enjoying the race itself really is what made it kind of a no-brainer for me to just pursue enduro.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you carried on for the rest of that season. Was it, where was the next round?
Yeah, thanks to Isabeau, actually. She's the one who said to the team, like, now, like, you've got to bring her to Europe. Like, she doesn't know what she's doing, so she's crashing. But you have, and still to this day, like, Isabeau still brings me back or, like, just gives me good guidance out on the trails sometimes when I'm overwhelmed or having a crash or something. So, yeah, she's a really cool rider and a cool person, so. Just shout out to her for convincing them to bring me over. And that year was actually Ainsa and Finale.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You had a couple of pretty good results as well, didn't you?
I ended up finishing fourth in Ainsa, and Finale totally beat me up. I think I finished like 15th or 11th, I forget. But okay. Not my best race, yeah.
Yeah, but fourth in your second ever Enduro World Series. You must have felt pretty good about that.
Yeah, like now we're saying four and I like worry that it isn't. I think it is. Like, I'm pretty sure.
I can look it up. I'll have a look.
Yeah.
If Roots and Rain is right, then you were fourth.
Okay, yeah. Cool. So, yeah, it was good. And funny enough, back then I was like just starting to do my degree and I had missed like 2 days or 1 day of practice, I think. So I rode like 2 or 3 of the stages, like fully blind. But Ainsa is actually a good place to end up doing that. So I was pretty lucky because you can kind of see what's coming and stuff.
Right.
But yeah, I think my physical ability really helped me back then. Funny enough, like I think enduro is a very it's just a balance of physical and technical ability. And if you have the physical ability to match your technical ability, then you're going to do really well. I think Cecile has, like, if you compare both of those, really high. So mm-hmm. she can ride at a really high level and not get too tired. So I think back then when I started, I was actually, I had a better physical ability and my technical ability wasn't really there because it was like my first few times on a trail bike and just figuring out what I can do and how I could do it. But then now I think the balance kind of changed because I felt that I needed to work on my technical ability so much. I did in the past few years. So now yeah. I would say that my recent results are due to good technical skills more than to my physical ability. So
interesting. So yeah, so what changed then from, I guess fairly quickly you moved away from kind of XC focused training and mm-hmm. refocused your efforts around enduro. What's different from an XC program to an enduro program?
Yeah, I definitely made the switch feel like easy here on this podcast, but like it was a big questioning for me, like to do it or not, because I was pretty committed to the national team program and my coach was the national team coach. So actually nothing really changed for me. I just kept training as if I was doing cross country that first winter. Okay. And slowly, like, my riding just changed from like having a bigger bike and just riding different trails. And yeah, I ended up parting ways with that coach because our goals were kind of different now. So now I actually worked on my own for like the 2 first years of doing enduro. Okay. I just kind of rode and enjoyed riding my bike and kind of knew myself and knew my body from those years of racing cross country. So, and I needed, I think, that time off maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But now now everyone's going faster. Everyone's training more. So I don't have that room to play. So I work with Keith Wilson. It's Katrin Spendrell's husband. And
okay.
He has some good experience with coaching and he's very keen on understanding what enduro is and understanding a new sport, I think, is kind of a cool challenge for him as well. So yeah, now we work together and I rely on him for like specific trainings more, and yeah, pretty good relationship. So quite happy with what we came up with this summer. So
yeah. So was that your first, is this season you've been your first season off the back of a winter with him?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And what were the obvious changes from when you were, you know, working alone and kind of creating your own program versus what you're doing with Pete?
Sorry, it's Keith. My English.
Oh, sorry, Keith.
Lost in translation.
That's right.
The obvious change is like, I really use his knowledge for specific training sessions. So like when I was alone, that's something that maybe I wouldn't do as much. I would only kind of include my intensities in like, oh, there's this climb on this trail, I'm going to do it fast. like sometimes now I actually have like sessions of training where I go to work and it's just like, say I warm up, I do like some sprints and then I do a specific set of intervals and another set and then other sprints and a cool down and just interval training.
More targeted then, more specific.
Yeah.
And you, am I right in thinking you guys use the stages power meter for your training?
Yeah, we do.
that right? Does that does that help then? Is that you're targeting based on power?
Yeah, it helps my coach. Like I use it on my race bike, so out on the trails, and I use it on my road bike as well, and that's also on my trainer, because as a Canadian, being on the trainer is part of your winter. we use it like next week. Say this week is kind of my reactivation week, and next week is the baseline testing, so I'm gonna do like a 30 seconds max power, a minute, 5 minute, and then throughout the winter we're gonna redo these tests and see if we're progressing.
Okay. Yeah, so you use those metrics to track your progress.
Yeah, I say I like try to turn a blind eye to those numbers, but I definitely look at them.
I think everyone does. People will say, yeah, I don't care about the numbers.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think everyone does deep down. So yeah, reactivation week. What's that then? So you've come
that's like something off-season.
Oh, okay. It sounds cool.
It's like I haven't done anything for 4 weeks, so I should probably start doing something, because if I go right away with like a training week, I'm going to end up in a body bag at the end of the week. So
I see.
Yeah, right. I pretty much just did yoga and like went for a couple runs this week just to get things going before we actually start training.
Yeah. So yeah, what kind of off the bike stuff do you do then? You mentioned yoga and running there.
Well, I had to be pretty creative with that for the past 2 years, because this is the first fall that I have two functioning wrists. So back when I had the injuries, I tried to become a runner, but it didn't really work. But I tried hard. So I jog a lot. Like I enjoy being out in the trails in the woods. And I also I do yoga. That was harder with a broken wrist. So I'm actually just back at it. But yeah, hiking as well. Like in BC, we have the chance of having beautiful mountains and very accessible trails that you can just go on. So a lot of pedestrian activities.
What type of yoga do you do? Do you do a specific form or?
Not really. Like I kind of do whatever studio has the best deal.
Fair enough.
No, but here in Spanish it's hot yoga, so that's also something that we don't like really try hard to put in my program, but it's kind of part of it, because heat training is good for altitude adaptation, and I have like a little bit of ligament injury on my pinky right now, so just like being in the heat kind of helps the healing process. So instead of just going to sit in a sauna, I go to that hot yoga place.
Interesting. Do you find that the yoga helps with flexibility and with riding?
Yeah, like every time I go to yoga, I tell myself we should go more often. I think it helps with flexibility for sure. I'm always kind of like one of the most inflexible in the class. And when we do stretches of hamstrings and stuff, like I just can't even bend. But yeah, I think it helps me, but it mostly helps me mentally. Like it just grounds me and it makes me feel relaxed and focused and happy in my choices. So I think that's mostly why I go to yoga.
Interesting. I've not heard people kind of describe it in that way very often, but it makes sense. Kind of meditative, calm time.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, cool. You mentioned injuries. You've definitely had your fair share over the last few years. Take us through that. So is it three wrist injuries?
Two wrist injuries, but I also broke my hand, so people think it's also a wrist injury.
Ah, right. Okay. So take us through those and kind of.
Yeah.
How you got them and then how you've dealt with it.
And so I mentioned like how kind of had no idea what I was doing with enduro, and I was getting counseled by like Izao, and like, oh, maybe you need to go slower, and like kind of taking hints and stuff here. But being a racer, it's kind of hard to make a racer slow down. Only it can only come from within, I think. But yeah, so in 2016, which was after my first few Enduros the previous years, I was on the Rocky team and we were in Chile, which was the first round. And that's where I did my metacarpal on like in practice. I had no other bruises, no nothing. It was a stupid front wheel washover. So that healed pretty quick, like 6 weeks. And then I was back for the race and finale that year, and thanks to a lot of time on the trainer and keeping my mind sharp, I managed to finish third in La Trille that year.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were in Whistler same year. I broke my scaphoid on A-line riding to go practice, not even practicing.
So, oh wow, just cruising.
Yeah, and that's definitely like just, I was nervous about riding a trail that was actually in the race. So when I say you have to know what's going on, you do. So I was nervous. I was also nervous about riding A-line. I know that sounds funny, like, but for me, everything was new, like jumps, like figuring out my bike and stuff. So I was in this nervous mindset, and I was just like on A-line and not feeling comfortable, being worried. And yeah, I landed the jump sideways because I saw someone further down the trail that wasn't in my way, but I just got nervous and yeah, I had a little wipe down and broke my scaphoid, my left scaphoid.
And how long did that one keep you out for?
That was like really long, because 6 weeks they tried to let it heal without surgery. It didn't heal, and then it took me 4 weeks to get into surgery. And then because I'm like a healthy young adult, and that injury wasn't keeping me from, you know, living my life as a student. Yeah. So getting in the system was kind of hard. So, and then another 6 weeks for the surgery to heal. So we were at 16 weeks.
Oh, wow. Fair play. How do you deal with that? Well, maybe we should move on to the next one, because that's been longer, hasn't it?
The first one was the worst one, I think. Because it was from like August to December. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, so the year after, where was it? Oh, yeah. So the year after, that's 2017, I did it on Heavy Flow, the rock gap that was actually in the race in Whistler this year. But right. So in 2017, I was just training, like riding with one of my friends. And we were sessioning that, and I was worried about coming short, so I gave a pedal stroke kind of coming in. I overshot a little bit, and the landing's a bit rough, and I hadn't checked out the run out properly, so I ended up not being able to make the next turn, kind of went over the bar. That was one of my bad crashes, like I was in shock after. Like the other two were just like mellow, like, yeah, I had something broken, but it wasn't bad like that one.
Not a big crash kind of thing, just an unfortunate injury, whereas this one sounds like it was a you rang your bell kind of thing.
Yeah, this one was just like very, like I kind of hurt my rib, hurt my hip, like it's just a big crash. And I just redid the same wrist that time. So yeah. Now it was pretty tricky, like no surgeon kind of really wanted to reopen it, because scaphoids, if you break them once, you're lucky if they heal. And then I was doing it for the second time on a wrist that I'd already have surgery on. So I had to go privately to a doctor that I was referred to by Katrin Pendrell, who had a thumb injury. And anyway, Dr. Rob French, he was amazing, like top of the, I'm not going to say top of the line, but I just mean like top surgeon in Canada. And he really, really helped me out. So yeah, it ended up healing, thank God. Like, some parts are not healed, and it's quite a complicated pattern, but not enough time to get into, like, the details. But it's functioning. And
right.
Yeah, so that was a bit easier because the process was kind of sped up from going privately here.
Right, okay, yeah. And how's the movement in it now? Because I saw you briefly at Eurobike and you still had pretty limited movement in it, didn't you?
I still have pain, like, constant if I try to push my range of movement. I'm like, maybe I have 30 or like 35% in terms of flexion. I'm just doing it as I speak to you. And in terms of extension, I'm quite limited.
Right.
Yeah, I think if it was like a couple months back, I'd be more angry telling you about that. But
right.
I think I've kind of made peace that that's happening and our sport is quite risky. And
yeah, for sure. It's part of it, isn't it? It's an unfortunate downside of a pretty cool job.
Yeah.
Yeah. So does it affect you on the bike? Can you feel it? Do you have to wear a brace or anything?
It affects me mentally mostly. Like, that's what I had to go through this season. Just like trying to ride normally and not think about it. And so I've started with a brace at my first race back this year in Slovenia. And then we did the taping, and then we kind of slowly, like, put less and less support. But I think the support was mostly there for me. Like, I just started worrying about what if I crash. Like,
mm-hmm.
I think when you have a big crash, you kind of associate crashing with injury. And so to have a couple of tumble and actually come out, like, uninjured was a good dissociation. So, yeah, that's kind of what I had to go through this summer. And I don't think it changed my riding for the worst, but I think it changed my riding. Like, I don't think I ride the same. And that's something I really had to make peace with. That made me really angry at first. I was like, oh, it's never going to be like before. Sure, but it doesn't mean that it won't be like as good or better. Like, it just is going to be different. So I think, like, it's kind of, with injury, is a journey of, like, feeling those angry feelings. I think it's a lie to just tell yourself that you're fine and it's no problem. Well, I mean,
yeah,
maybe some people can do it. I don't function that way. But a journey of, like, accepting those hard feelings and then accepting what happened to you and kind of doing an objective reading of what happened, why did it happen. And sometimes it's just heartbreaking because sometimes it's just really a stupid accident that couldn't have been avoided. Like, we play a sport that has, like, high risk, so we have to be willing to pay the price, I think. Other times you can do a good reading, and the second time I did my wrist, I was definitely in a mindset where I was trying to push myself on a feature and that I hadn't analyzed perfectly. And maybe I was a bit too, like, not stressed, but, like, too, like, excited, or my mindset wasn't calm and confident and knowing I got that. It was kind of, like, a bit too shaky, and I ended up having a bad crash. So I think that's kind of part of my learning as becoming a better racer and a better mountain bike rider.
Yeah. And it just, I guess, it reinforces how important the psychological side of the sport and of racing is. Is your degree in psychology, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. I did a degree in psychology, like a degree in science and psychology. Yeah. Like, for me, I know mental side of riding is a very important component. Like, I know my feelings, as much as I would want them to, like, can affect how I ride, like, for sure, like, hands down. Like, say I feel a bit anxious or, like, nervous about something, and oftentimes it's silly things. I'm not going to ride the same. And I think sometimes I have those feelings like in life too, like mm-hmm. anxiousness or something. So I think that what brings me back to riding all the time is when I like bring my helmet down and put my goggles on. That's when I feel the most confident and I feel great and I know I have confidence in my abilities. So I think the mental side of racing is so intertwined in everyone in different ways. So yeah.
And have you got any kind of techniques that help you channel that belief when you put your helmet and your goggles on? I'm sure it's all very kind of mm-hmm. bespoke to an individual, but are there any things that you use that work for you?
I think so. What I've been trying to do lately is to actually try and channel that state that I get in real life when I don't actually have my bike gear on, because sometimes I would get nervous in a social situation and start feeling anxious. I try to remember how I feel at the top of a stage, and how I feel at the top of a stage is I'm there and I'm like putting my helmet back on, putting my goggles on, and I'm telling myself like that I believe in myself, that I believe in my abilities, that I've proven to myself that I'm part of this like very high end, like international field of women racing, and then I have my place there, and that I believe I can ride my bike really fast, and that I know I love riding my bike. So I try to channel that inner positive talk. I think it's always about self talk, like in a situation that's completely stupid and shouldn't make me feel anxious, but whatever, that's just my brain. So I tell myself like that. I belong here. It's fine. I have good insight. Like what I want to say is valuable, or so. Just kind of self-talk and self-believing in yourself.
Yeah, not always easy, but it definitely helps if you can channel it, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So talk us through a little bit of your 2018 season then. So you missed the first few rounds. And it was Pets and Jamnica was your first round, which was pretty full on, wasn't it? It was a super, super long event. Yeah. You had the tunnel to ride through. Yeah. And how was that as a first race back? Because it's been a tough season, I think, for people.
Yeah. So I missed the first two rounds because of the wrist. It wasn't ready to go. And then in Slovenia, everyone told me like you chose the worst one to come back to, and I was like, it feels like every round has been the worst one. But it was definitely hard. Like I remember laying on Tara's table, Tara's our manager on the road and mostly our physio. So laying down on the table, looking at Tara and being like, after the first day of practice, I don't think I can do it. Like I kept my physical like fitness to what I could while being like happy and staying mentally sane on the trainer. So it wasn't like at the top level. So it was really hard for me that round. Like I probably was going the same speed on the transfer and on the stages because I was just maxed out the whole weekend. Like out on the trails, our mechanic Jeff comes riding with us sometimes, and he like saved me from like stage five. I wasn't going to go practice because there was this big climb, and I was just like, I don't think I can even do it. But he like kept going, and we had good laughs, and yeah, it was the start. I knew it was the start. I knew it was going to be hard, so I was just kind of ready for it, and I kept my riding very, very mellow. I avoided crashing, which was hard in Slovenia because there was roots and off cambers everywhere. And so, yeah, it was, I knew it was the start. Like, so I was just happy to be out there and be doing what I like. So,
And did that give you a bit of a boost to get through that in one piece? And I think you finished ninth as well.
Yeah, I did, like, for sure. I saw the progression from stages to stages, like, so only positives. Like, I fought some negative thoughts for sure, because I kind of always have to battle them, but really only went from Slovenia with positives. We were like, we've done it. I didn't even know if I could make it through practice. So the fact that I was able to make it through the race was a win. And yeah.
And still top 10. Yeah, pretty good. And then on to La Twil, which I think kind of scared quite a few people. I've spoken to a few racers that were at that event, and they said it was pretty full on.
Yeah, I forget which stage it was, but it got cancelled for us, and like, I'm never going to ride that trail again.
Wow, was it that bad?
It's just like, not bad. Like, it's fun riding. There's a balance between technical riding and technical racing. Like, I wouldn't ask anyone to like go race like a Lomer on the shore here that's like super technical with skinnies, but I really enjoy riding it.
Right.
So yeah. I think there are, sometimes it's a fine line. Like, it's hard to make the call, I think, on trails. So
yeah, but
that one was a bit hairy in the rain.
Yeah, I bet. But you managed to kind of keep your progression back into the top of the field. So sixth at La Twil. Mm-hmm. How are you feeling there? Did you start to feel more confident on the bike? Was the self-talk kind of improving?
I seem to be doing well when there's hardship, like, because when it's hard, you have no choice but to just be positive and make everything you can to make it through. So for me, that's an easier zone to just like really be positive and go for it and do everything you can. So, and I also enjoy riding in La Twil, so I think that played a part. But yeah, I think I was actually really happy of having making it through Slovenia, probably a bit fitter just from that weekend of racing. Yeah. Just kept the momentum going and definitely starting to feel better on my bike, starting to feel a bit like myself. But I also remember moments in practice where I had to stop like 5 or 6 times in one stage to just give my wrist a break. And that was shaky moments of fate, but I always had my team around me and Tara to bring me back and give me a treatment that evening and do everything we can to make it work. So,
wow. So what sort of treatment were you using on the wrist to kind of help you through it? Was there anything special that you were doing?
Not really special. Like, it mostly, Tara really knows me and my body, and she's been on the racing scene for years. So we would do harder treatments prior to practice. And then once practice started, it's not about healing, but about managing. So that balance all summer, she managed to get really well because we wanted my wrist to get better, but putting it through a weekend of racing was making it worse. So that weekend we were only managing pain, so mostly like acupuncture needles, electro, like little shock sometimes for the muscles, just massage, tractions on my fingers, whatever felt good in that moment. A lot of work on my shoulder, my elbow, because the wrist not functioning properly really hindered those two. So yeah, like, definitely without Tara or without any treatment, I wouldn't have raced Slovenia and I wouldn't have finished La Twil.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of skill. I didn't realize kind of, you know, we obviously see evidence of you guys getting a massage or whatever after mm-hmm. practice, but I guess never fully appreciate how awesomely skilled these people are and how much knowledge they've got of keeping the human body going.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And then on to Whistler. So that's your, basically your local, as local as it gets, race on the EWS calendar anyway. Yeah. You're Squamish based.
Yeah.
And how was Whistler this year? I think I got the impression that the fun was back in EWS. Like everyone seemed to have a smile on their face again.
Yeah.
After the first few rounds being pretty tough.
Yeah, I think they, from the rumors that circulate, they had some like fresh cut trails, but after the organizers going to race Slovenia, they just like decided to change their plan and just stick with trails that function as bike trails. And I think it was still a big day out, still a big weekend, but it was just good trails, good fun, and definitely a more mellow vibe in the peloton.
And does the kind of home vibe help at all? Do you feel more comfortable being in Whistler?
It's funny for me because it's still I don't think I can call Whistler home. Like it's Canada, so that's something special. I think racing in your country, wherever it is something special. Racing in your hometown is something even more special. But that feeling of being at home in Canada and being in Whistler, having more people that we know around, I think it, positive, negatives, like I think more positives for sure. But then sometimes you can have added pressure and it can be hard to deal with. But I think our team did really well this year at just managing this and setting a good vibe and just like really keeping the same format as when we're away. So we just had a house, right. We were together and we were riding. And so, I think it's, for me, was only positives. Like we got those special Canadian kits that made the weekend like even more special. And for me, it was positives.
Yeah, it looked cool. And then, ended up with a fourth place. So getting back towards kind of, I guess, where you'd want to be, maybe towards the top end of the field. And
that was the first time of the year where I was just like, okay, I'm riding. Riding, I'm having fun, it feels good. I was just so happy to, like, now reflecting back on it, like I'm so happy it actually worked out that way and that I can actually race my bike and feel good on my bike, feel like I'm going fast.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that must have been a massive positive mental thing to suddenly feel like that after a good chunk of time off and struggling through Slovenia and Latour.
Yeah, but it's funny, like it switches quickly. Like you quickly forget how hard it was before it becomes a bit easier. I remember in Slovenia, like, realizing that I maybe was going to be in the top 10, and then all of a sudden anything outside of a top 10 was bad, but the first goal was to finish the race. So that's why I say, like, reflecting on it now is funny. But Whistler was good. I kind of was a little bit overconfident at the top of the last stage and didn't want to have top of the world's a bit sensitive for me after that big crash at my first race there. So I took it super mellow and I forgot to turn it on. So, like cheers to all the other girls. Like it's one day it's your day, the other day it's someone else's day. So it's fine. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, it's cool. And then on to the last couple of rounds to Ainsa and Finale, and bagged third at both of those events. So like in reflection, how when you sat down at the end of the season and kind of looked back at your performance, how did you feel? Like, what did the analysis look like for you?
Well, now that I have to voice it, I feel like I'm maybe a bit too hard on myself sometimes, but I was just like, well, you knew you could do it and you did it, good job. No, it's good. I feel really happy and I feel quite grateful to be in a setting where I can, like our team, like where I can actually put those performances down and show, Yeah, to do it twice in a row, like I hadn't done that in the past. So it just really puts like that whole injured ALN side in the back pocket. And we've learned it was hard. I'm excited to be known as like someone that does a full season and just races and not just gets injured. So it was kind of a full, like, just full circle.
Yeah, and good to come into the off season kind of healthy, I guess, compared to the last few.
Yeah, like it feels funny because you know how I said like that sometimes when it's hard and there's hardship, and that's when I find it easier to put down the hammer and go to work. So now I'm like, whoa, do I have it too easy? Like, am I going to like train enough or will I just be too chill? But no, I think we have a better engine, an engine that's not rusted, and a body that's not dinged.
yeah.
I think it should be okay. It's exciting times, and I look forward to see what a full winter of just easy and happy training can bring to the table for next year.
Yeah, no, it should be exciting. Be good to see. What do you think it's going to take them to break into that top two or even to beat Cecile? Because she's still, you know, there seems to be stages where people can get close to her, and then she's still over a, you know, over an event seems to be able to pull like a reasonable margin, I guess.
If I give you an honest read, I actually just had a phone call with my coach yesterday to come out of reactivation and actually start training. Cecile, this is hard for my sport athlete ego to admit, but Cecile was a better cross-country racer than me when I was a cross-country racer. So she has more physical ability. I don't think people realize how strong she is because she really downplays it, but she's playing the game with like years of like heavy training in cross-country. Mm-hmm. So she has that in the bank for and then she's able to match her really high technical skills with that physical ability, like I was saying before. So she's able to sustain a level of riding that is higher than me. So she has two baselines that are a bit higher than me. So what I have to do is bring my physical ability to the same baseline and keep working on my technical ability in riding. I just have to work harder, man. She's just stronger.
Well, and having a winter without injury, hopefully, will give you that opportunity to certainly to gain some strength.
Yeah, I really hope so.
Put the hours in.
I think I have it in me. It's just gotta put in the work. Like she makes it seem really chill, but I know she's out there just training like an animal.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah. I'm sure she's working super hard. You don't put those performances down without it, do you? So
yeah,
it's not luck, that's for sure.
Yes, there's Cecile, but there's Isabeau. Like she's just so precise and pinned and really fit as well. So yeah, it's going to be interesting when everyone's going to start putting in more work, and it's just going to get tighter. Like already now versus like when I started, like there's no way I could have just like shown up and raced and got fourth like I did in Ainsa. Like, see, I showed up and I got nine in Slovenia. So
yeah, it's a competitive field, isn't it? And every year it seems to be taking it up a good notch. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. It's exciting to see. All right. Well, we're getting pretty close to the end of our time together, but we've got a few questions that we've asked everyone. So we'll hit those if that's good.
Yeah.
All righty. So the first one, if our listeners had, and we've upped it to £150, and I haven't done the conversion to Canadian dollars.
A lot.
a lot. Okay. If people had a reasonable amount of money to spend to improve their kind of performance on a bike, what would you recommend that they spend it on?
Ooh, Like, would it have to be like a self-improvement or like an improvement on their bike?
Well, what do you think would be more beneficial? I guess it could be either.
If you're a racer, I would say if you don't have a coach, maybe like try and find a coach that you can talk to. And if you do have a coach, then maybe I would use that free money to invest to talk to a counselor or a psychologist or a sports performance counselor, because for me, my biggest improvement is when my mental game is A1. That's when I ride the fastest. So that's an important part of my training. And I think it's a good investment.
So do you use like a psychologist on a regular basis then for that?
I felt the need to like for a couple of years, and this fall I finally decided to just kind of do it. And honestly, she's like a high performance consultant, but we kind of talk about real life stuff and we just chat. And if I have things that I really struggle with, then we kind of focus on those. But this is the fall I've been doing the best, yet I still committed to that process because I think it's just like, even if you're doing good, like just to chat and to figure out points you can get a bit more sharp on. And yeah, it's great to have someone that has the experience to point you in the right direction.
Cool. Interesting. Yeah, we've not had that answer yet. That's a new one. I like it. Okay. Second question. If you could wind the clock back and have a sit down with your 16-year-old self, advice would you give her?
Oh, God. I would tell her just like, just chill. Don't worry. Like, be yourself. I would sum all of that up to like, ask yourself all the questions, but don't put too much importance on them. Like, you're going to ask yourself questions all the time. Just go make a decision and like run with it.
Okay. I like it. Good, good. And then the last question then, if you could have a coaching session with anyone past or present, who would it be and what would you want to learn?
Whoa, that's heavy. I don't know. I don't know. What would I want to learn? I choose Martha Gill for wheelies.
Yep, she has got that dialed, is for sure. What about from the racing side of things? Is there anyone, men's or women's, or even outside of racing, is there anyone that you see ride that you're like, I wish I could do that, or I could do it that way?
I really tried to emulate Tracy Mosley in my riding. Like, I think she's fast and precise, and if she has a crash, it's because of an accident, not because of something that she ended up doing, I think. So but I feel like I was very lucky in my few years to get to talk to her and get to have her insight and connect with her, so I feel like I'm already getting that from Tracy. If I just pick someone, like, I don't know. Who would you pick?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I'd love to go for a ride with Sam Hill, just because I like watching him ride, and I'd love to be able to kind of get some insight into how he does what he does.
You just take every insight, always.
Is that all it is? Just insight lines?
Totally, it's not.
There's too many to choose from, isn't there? There's a lot of good rides out there.
There's too many. I'd really like to just go out and ride with Cecile and see what it actually feels like. If it's just an absolute insanity and I can't even keep up, or if it's like I can kind of keep up. So here, maybe I pick Cecile.
All right. Yeah, that'd be good. It's always great to ride with someone who's like just that bit quicker, because it kind of drags you on a bit, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's really something to be gained when you're riding with people of your level, but like different, better at different things than you, or like someone just a bit faster than you. Yeah,
cool. All right, good. Well, if people want to find out a bit more about you or follow you through next season, where's the best place on kind of internet or social media to find you?
The Instagram.
All right. What's your Instagram?
It's at Andrean LN. So AndreanELN.
All righty. Cool. We'll put a link in the show notes as well. So that'll be over on our website. People can find that. All right. Well, it's been really interesting chatting. I've really enjoyed it. I'm excited to see how next season goes for you. I think it's going to be a good one. Hope the winter goes well and the strength gains are coming. And yeah, we look forward to seeing how you get on next year.
Yeah, thank you so much. I look forward to next year too.
Nice one. Cheers.
Cheers. Bye.
Well, that's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, then please let us know by getting in touch or leaving us a review on iTunes or over on your favourite podcast platform. Thanks again to 661 for supporting this episode. And don't forget, as a downtime listener, you can get 25% off the whole 661 range by heading to 661.com and using the code DOWNTIMEPODCAST25 at the checkout. The link and the code will be in the show notes for this episode over on downtimepodcast.com. Right, we'll have another episode for you really soon, but until next time, get out and ride.